The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today, Governor Brian Kemp opens Georgia for business, Governor Inslee throws a wet blanket over Washington again, and Governor Kate Brown torches any semblance of credibility with a deceitful ad campaign for her lockdowns. Plus, what to tell your vaccine-hesitant friends if and when a COVID vaccine arrives, and an update on the clash between the Paycheck Protection Program and unemployment insurance. I'm Georgie Borman. Welcome to the 180cast. Hello, welcome back to the 180cast. I'm your host, Georgie Borman. This is the podcast where we figure out how people change their minds on a variety of subjects, ranging from lifestyle to religion to politics, mostly politics. And we also try to bring some moral and logical clarity out of all of the cultural and political confusion. And boy, is there a lot of it. So hopefully we can clear some of that up today. And hopefully you will leave this podcast feeling a little bit better and a little bit more educated on everything that is going on in the world, mostly related to COVID-19. Because let's be honest, that's just the top of everybody's list and what everybody is thinking about right now. So, of course, we're going to cover a lot of that. I'm going to do more of a good news, bad news format. That seemed to go over well last time, so we're going to do more of that. We're going to cover several different things. But before we do, I want to let you know that this podcast is brought to you once again by MyPillow. To learn more, go to MyPillow.com. Let's go ahead and get into the top stories.
I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
I don't know what we're yelling about.
It will top the list.
Some very brave governors are bucking the naysayers and starting to open their states back up for business. Brian Kemp on the top of that list today, going so far as to open salons, tattoo parlors, bowling alleys, all sorts of things where people work in close proximity to one another or with their clients. And it is causing quite the controversy. And of course, we all know why. You can't social distance as a hairstylist. You kind of need to be right there in front of the head. But Brian Kemp says he's confident in his decision. He understands why Trump doesn't agree. Here's what Trump had to say about it.
I told the governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, that I disagree strongly with his decision to open certain facilities which are in violation of the phase one guidelines for the incredible people of Georgia. They're incredible people. But at the same time, he must do what he thinks is right. I want him to do what he thinks is right. But I think spas and beauty salons and tattoo parlors and barbershops in phase one, we're going to have phase two very soon, is just too soon. They can wait a little bit longer, just a little bit, not much, because safety has to predominate. We have to have that.
Of course, wannabe Governor Stacey Abrams, who lost the Georgia gubernatorial race to Brian Kemp, had some stronger words, and by stronger words, I mean outright lies about Brian Kemp's plan to open up Georgia. She went on The View to tell Whoopi Goldberg why Brian Kemp is a very bad man with very dangerous ideas.
Georgia is not flattening the curve. We have one of the highest rates of infection and one of the lowest rates of testing.
Sure, except Stacey Abrams' assertions here are not really supported by the evidence. First of all, it's hard to tell how sharp the curve would have been if mitigation measures weren't taken. You can't really know what could have been. So she can't possibly know that. She can't prove a negative. What we can know with more certainty, however, is whether Georgia is climbing down from its peak, whether it is down from its peak and is no longer in danger of surpassing its hospital capacity. Something, of course,
Abrams vehemently denies. So according to Georgia's Department of Public Health, their official data, their confirmed cases on Tuesday, April 14th, totaled 844. That was their peak out of a population of like 10.5 million people. And those cases since then have been staggering downward to about 360 on Monday, April 20th. Now, the Monday-Tuesday period is really important because you can see in all of these curves from the states that the cases rise at the very beginning of the week, likely because diagnoses weren't made during the weekend, and so all of those pile up on Mondays. So looking from peak to peak on Mondays is really important versus trying to say, well, this is what it said on, you know, Thursday, April 23rd, when that's sort of one of the lower points in the curve anyway. So 300 down from 844 to 360, that's pretty good. It does seem that, I mean, when you look at the graph, it looks like a curve and that Georgia is on the other side of it pretty distinctively. So she's basically wrong there. She goes on to tell more lies, though. Take a listen.
But what's even more concerning is that while he tends to try to treat this as an issue of small business owners. What we know, I know as a former small business owner, is that the people who are going to be sent to the front lines are the people who are the least resilient. They likely don't have health insurance. They probably won't have protective equipment. But most importantly, they can't afford to say no if they're told to go back to work. So they risk the possibility of sacrificing their health in order to keep a job that's going to pay them low wages and not protect them if they get sick. This makes no sense, and it doesn't improve our economy. It simply puts more Georgians at risk.
Oh, Stacey, how are you going to win this vice presidential nomination and be Biden's chosen one if you can't even pay attention to your own state's policies? In Georgia, the Labor Commissioner just announced very recently, along with this order to reopen most of the state, you can earn up to $300 a week, or about $750 an hour, and keep all of your unemployment benefits. And if you don't want to return to work, you don't have to, because you can still get at least your $600 a week from the federal government because you separated from your job due to fear of exposure. If you're a hairstylist and you are working inches from somebody and actually touching them, or you're a tattoo artist or something like that, your fear of exposure is pretty, you know, you're dealing with multiple clients like face-to-face, very close all of the time. It's very reasonable for you to have a fear of exposure, particularly if you're in a vulnerable category. Let's say you have diabetes, or you have heart disease, or you are older. Makes sense, right? So you can just not go back to work. And apparently Stacey Abrams doesn't understand that. She missed the memo. Missed the memo on that one. Texas also opened up retail and other places of business with social distancing and hygiene requirements. So the types of businesses that Kemp is very boldly opening up, Texas isn't quite there yet. You've got to maintain at least 6 feet apart and hygiene requirements, and you've got to be screened at the door for whether you have a cough or anything like that. Interestingly, there hasn't been a lot of talk in the media from what I have heard of Texas's loosening of their lockdown. They hit their peak on April 9th at about 1,450 cases, and that's been slowly but steadily trending downward to 875 to date. So they're doing really well. And Governor Greg Abbott announced this order on April 17th. So we're talking about just about a week ago, and they are still continuing down the curve. That's good. That's good news. You open retail and you don't see any spike at all. That's very good news. And I'm sure that was very encouraging to Kemp when he made this decision. Continuing on with the governors, Governor Inslee gave an address in order to announce the status quo. Yep. He got everybody hyped up, got the media in Washington State all hyped up on Tuesday, saying he was going to give an address about where we're at with COVID-19. And he basically said there are some construction workers that can go back to work, but the rest of you have to stay home, and probably we're going to have to stick with this after May 4th. We're going to have to stick with this entire lockdown, and there's going to be no easing of restrictions. And here's a little bit of what he said that really made me want to throw my phone at the damn computer.
Like, and it will look more like a turning of a dial than the flip of a switch. We're going to take steps and then monitor to see whether they work or if we must continue to adapt. We will not be able to lift many of the restrictions by May 4th. And we will let you know when we can lift those restrictions just as soon as we know. You know, Washington's likely decline in the spread of COVID-19 is encouraging. In the coming days, we will receive additional health modeling projecting the course of this virus. And we hope it will give us cause to begin lifting certain restrictions.
So basically, hold tight, everybody, all you people who lost your jobs, all you people who can't visit your loved ones. Just hang in there. Our curve is likely trending downward. Our numbers are likely in decline, and it's encouraging. But you know what? We need to wait on the models to tell us whether we can lift certain restrictions.
We need healthy people in order to build a healthy economy. The data tells us that if we were to lift all restrictions right now, or even 2 weeks from now, this decline would almost certainly stop, and the spread of COVID-19 would go up. Our gains in this fight have been hard won thanks to the sacrifices of countless Washingtonians. And to turn back on this successful temporary approach now would be disastrous. So this recovery requires a strategic approach guided by science, not politics.
Okay, first of all, the idea that the numbers of people infected with COVID-19 are going to go up is like, duh. Everybody knows this. Everybody knows that after you have a complete lockdown and you start easing people back into normal life and they're interacting more, you are very likely to face a spike in infections and consequently a spike in deaths. Now, does that exceed hospital capacity? Since we've spent all of this time flattening our curve, is there going to be enough of those very vulnerable people left that are going to suddenly become hospitalized and overwhelm our system? That's the question, but that is not what Governor Inslee was addressing. Governor Inslee was basically telling all of us Washingtonians that something that's not true, which is that if we open up now, we're going to lose all of our gains, right? These gains have been hard won and we can't, quote unquote, turn back now. That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. We are all going to get this virus at some point. All of us. What matters is whether we are taking precautions to protect the people who are most vulnerable, namely the people who live in the nursing homes, and whether we have increased hospital capacity enough to treat everybody who comes down with this disease. That's what we're supposed to be concerned with. But Inslee has gone way, way off the rails here and is saying not only are we off of the goal of making sure that we flatten the curve in order to not exceed hospital capacity, but he's saying basically that we need to stay in lockdown until the models tell us when we can ease up on our restrictions. Oh, you mean the models that have been wrong every frickin' day of this entire crisis? Those models? How about the IHME from the University of Washington? Is Inslee relying on that model? Because I see that one in the local news quite a bit. That model happens to be wrong 70% of the time. 70% of the time. It is outside its ridiculously wide margin of error. So it gives you a range and it says, we believe that tomorrow's or next week's deaths or hospitalizations are going to be between this point and this point. It's crazy wide. Like, honestly, like thousands and thousands of cases. And it still ends up being wrong, even though it claims to have a confidence interval of 95%. That means that it's only supposed to be outside of its margin of error 5% of the time. It's wrong 70% of the time. These are the scientists that Governor Inslee wants me to trust? Are you kidding me right now? You've got to be bleeping joking. What else is there to say? He's impervious to reason. He's impervious to logic. He's definitely impervious to the struggles that people in Washington State are facing right now. Not just economic struggles, emotional struggles, mental health struggles. Oh, that one, that's rich. He says that we need to put more funding and resources toward mental health, you know, mental health facilities, mental health resources for people because we're having such a hard time. Oh yeah, just throw a bone in that direction. Barely even acknowledging the trouble that people are having with this. The incredible isolation, the loneliness, the depression, the anxiety. Sorry, extra funding for mental health is not going to fix this problem, Governor Inslee. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Wet blanket after wet blanket, expecting us to maintain this status quo indefinitely until some mysterious model that's actually accurate appears and tells us when we can lift our restrictions. Guess what? The only way we're going to know whether we can lift restrictions is A, whether or not we've been climbing down from the curve, which we have been in Washington State for some time, and B, whether or not you try to lift that restrictions and you see whether the case rate spikes. All of the competent epidemiologists are saying that that's what you have to do. You try one thing, and if you see a massive spike, you say, okay, we need to pull back on that. Let's try maybe opening up something else. If you see a massive spike, you gotta pull back on that. And you take this on a case-by-case basis and you see what the actual data says, not what these mystical models are trying to tell you. I know I'm going on with this. I have so much more to cover. Anyway, let's continue. So that's some bad news. Some good news is that two Washington State County sheriffs have decided to decline to enforce the stay-at-home orders. This made me cheer. Okay, so Franklin County Sheriff J.D. Raymond said on Monday he is declining to enforce the shelter-in-place order, saying it's a one-size-fits-all approach and that each community in our state is fundamentally different. He said he believes the order is unconstitutional and that he advocates for protecting, quote, the at-risk members of our community and continuing to minimize the effects of this virus. However, I simultaneously advocate, he goes on to say, that we be allowed to conduct business and worship in a safe and logical manner. And then he urges members of the county in this public statement that he made that he also put on Facebook to contact their legislators and push them to create a plan for reopening the economy. And then so the Snohomish County Sheriff, Adam Fortney, Snohomish County did fairly worse than Franklin County. But nevertheless, Sheriff Adam Fortney put out a similar statement on Tuesday. He said, this is a very serious issue and the appropriate precautions need to be taken in order to protect the most vulnerable populations. But that his communities have already shown that they understand the severity of the situation and they're doing everything they can to keep themselves and their families and their neighbors safe and healthy. So, you know, he said he's also worried about the economy and he's worried about Washingtonians that need to make a living for their family, as they should be. Every job is an essential job when it is feeding you and your family. And he says, as more data flood in week by week and day by day about this pandemic, he thinks it's clear that the models, as I said before, have not been entirely accurate. Well, that's a mild way of putting it. He said, well, that's okay. We can't continue down the same path we have been. If the government reaction does not fit the data, or even worse, the same government reaction makes our situation worse. He goes on to say that this is the part I really liked. He says the government's actions don't make any sense. The pot shops are deemed essential, but gun stores aren't, even though both provide a lot of tax revenue. Residential construction has been halted, but government construction has continued. He says that these contradictions, which allow some to feed their families and stay in business, and others who do exactly the same thing can't do that. He says that's bordering on unethical. Well, I would go ahead and say that that's definitely unethical. Also, there's two sheriffs in Michigan who last week said that they won't strictly enforce Governor Whitmer's insane measures, but they would deal with it on a case-by-case basis, according to Fox News. Thousands of people have protested the just absolute bonkers restrictions that Whitmer has put in place in Michigan. Thousands of people swamped the Capitol. They called it Operation Gridlock. Just thousands and thousands of cars. This is what it sounded like.
Dimwit, meaning Governor Whitmer, the guy with the cardboard sign. Usually I'm at work right now. A lot of people who are out of work are up here. Take a look over here. This guy runs a landscaping, roofing, and exterior company here. And right behind that, take a look, the recallwhitmernow.com sign. Again, cars as far as the eye can see.
Just bonkers. I'd say it sounds like bumper-to-bumper traffic, but it's actually bumper, then 6 feet, then bumper, which is ridiculous. Why would you need to social distance in your car? It's a car. It is impervious to viruses. Like, it's almost like, I would say that it's almost like mocking the social distancing rules, but I can't tell anymore. I know that they're lining up 6 feet apart in front of the food banks, and it's just absolutely just ridiculous. 6 feet apart in your cars. This is what we've come to. People do not use their heads. Okay, so more bad news. Oregon, the Oregon governor's office is fear-mongering. I wrote an article about this a couple days ago. Oregon lockdown ads saying basically that if you leave your home, that's probably going to make you a murderer. So it's the ads put out by the governor's office. There's a couple really egregious ones that I detail in my article, but I'm just going to play the music from one of them, and the entire thing is subtitled, so I'll just tell you what it says. Really quite chilling. If we don't stay home, we will continue to spread the coronavirus. 1.4% of all Oregonians could die. An average person knows 600 people, which means 5 people you know could lose their lives. Your kid's school teacher, your neighbor, your teammate, your barista, your doctor, your hairstylist, your friend, your uncle, your grandmother, your sister, your mother, your stepbrother, your partner, your child. It's up to you how many people live or die. Don't accidentally kill someone. Stay home. Save lives. Essentially, it's this ghoulish combination of fear and guilt that the governor's office is using to keep people compliant and cowering behind their front doors under the Oregon lockdown order. Oregon, by the way, has done pretty darn well in this entire pandemic. They're doing fine. They're not even close to exceeding hospital capacity. They're fine. What I find so interesting about this massive guilt trip, is that it comes from such an extreme place of privilege that the people who made this seem to be completely oblivious to. We live in a unique time in history where most people don't die of infectious diseases. Historically, that has not been the case. Historically, people die of infectious diseases. At some point, one of them is going to get you. So people who would place guilt on you for accidentally infecting someone who then dies from a virus, that is just speaking from a place of extreme privilege and being completely oblivious. I mean, at what other time in history would you possibly consider blaming your friend, your pastor, your rabbi, wife, mother, brother for infecting you? At what point would you blame them having accidentally carried home a deadly pathogen for making you sick and putting you in your deathbed? Would you presumptively blame complete strangers for supposedly indirectly infecting someone else, which is what this ad is doing, even though those people feel completely fine when they go about their daily business, that they're not trying to be reckless in any way, that they are taking precautions and washing their hands and using hand sanitizer and not touching things unnecessarily and coughing into their elbow? They're doing all of these things to make sure that they are being considerate of other people and their lives. And you're going to tell them that just stepping outside could make them a murderer? Accidentally infecting somebody with a pathogen makes you a murderer? The disconnect Between the way people are tweeting this coronavirus and the way that they treat other viruses, even something as deadly and horrifying as polio or measles or something like that, or even the flu, the disconnect is mind-boggling. I have never in my life seen an ad for vaccinating for the flu that said, if you don't get this vaccine, you're a murderer. Never in my life. I've seen vaccines save lives. I've seen this is the right thing to do for your community. Never have I ever seen something that said, if you get infected with the flu, or if you get infected with chickenpox, you could be killing somebody else. You know, one or two or five people you know could die. It's insanity. It's insanity. And it's time to step back and get our head out from behind these blinders that we have on, where we're only thinking about COVID-19, and step back and assess the situation and say, how does this compare with how we deal with other pathogens? How do we approach other diseases? Because we're not putting the same guilt on other people for spreading around influenza. Every year we have a flu season, every year people die from it. Little tiny babies die from it. And gosh, to insinuate that you might be mortally endangering your child, which is what this ad insinuates, for going outside, for going for a walk, going to the grocery store, maybe just going shopping for a pair of shorts or something like that, or going to visit your in-laws or something like that. To say that you're mortally endangering your child when only 3 children in the entire United States have died so far from this disease. 3 children. That's horrible, of course, but they don't even show up on the graphs. This is heinous. It is evil to put that kind of burden on somebody. If you're listening right now and you feel guilty because you've gone out and done things that are somewhat part of your normal life, you've gone and visited a friend or a relative that needed your company, or you really needed their company, because being in social interactions and being face-to-face with people is an integral part of the human experience and part of our well-being. Don't let anybody make you feel guilty about that. If you're running and spreading your germs everywhere and just coughing directly into the air and, you know, touching everything and not washing your hands, then maybe you should feel a little bit guilty, because you could be, there's a very, very small percent chance that you might be infecting somebody who ultimately dies from something like that. Do not let anybody guilt you and shame you into saying that stepping outside your front door might make you a murderer. In other good news, you might have seen in the news that there was a skate park in San Clemente that the government filled with sand so skateboarders couldn't use it, because gosh, those skateboarders, they're just a breeding ground for infection. Those skateboarders just whizzing past each other and doing tricks in the air. Anyway, so they filled it with sand, right? So dirt bikers showed up to play in the skate park. It is so great. I hope every dirt biker in the state eventually shows up to play in that skate park. That just really makes me happy. So there's this dirt biker, Connor Erickson, who showed up with a few of his friends to enjoy a few runs on the sandy surface. And then he helped some skaters dig out the sand so they could do some social shredding, as he put it in a social media post. He said, I think it's a big joke. These kids are cooped up inside their house and just want to go outside and have some fun. The dirt bike crew weren't the only ones who transformed the skate park, though. There was a local surfboard shaper who brought down a few deck chairs and set up a little beach scene. He said, we'd like to thank the city of San Clemente, who, after overreacting and irrationally shuttering all of our beaches and trails, came to the brilliant conclusion to use taxpayers' dwindling dollars to at least create for us a new beach. It's great. Makes me happy. All right, let's move into interview highlights. But first, I'm proud to let you know that this segment is sponsored by MyPillow. I have a MyPillow. It has replaced my memory foam pillow that I thought I would have forever because it was quite comfortable. But MyPillow is that wonderful combination of fluffy and supportive and breathable. It doesn't trap heat under my face. And keeping cool, especially as we move into the warmer months, is really essential for a good night's sleep year-round. You know, you probably have experienced some of these weird, very vivid dreams that we've all been having. Well, if you're not getting a deep, sound, restful night's sleep, you're probably going to have more of those. And being too hot is one of those things that keeps you dreaming. Mike Lindell, the inventor and CEO of MyPillow, wants you to have the greatest night's sleep ever. And you can get great discounts on all MyPillow products if you go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the listener specials. Get deep discounts on MyPillow's mattress toppers, bed sheets, towels, so much more. And now for 180Cast listeners, Mike is offering his best-selling offer of all time, the buy one, get one free offer today on the standard MyPillow Plus free shipping. And MyPillow products do come with a 10-year warranty. Hopefully we'll be out of this lockdown by then, right? But MyPillow has announced that they are extending their 60-day money-back guarantee, meaning orders placed between now and April 30th will have their 60-day money-back guarantee extended through July 1st. So go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener specials for the buy one, get one free offer on Giza sheets, which are Egyptian cotton, and they have deep pockets so they won't pop off your mattress, plus free shipping. Enter promo code 180CAST, that's 180CAST, or call 800-506-2641 for these awesome specials. That's 800-506-2641. Use the promo code 180CAST and let them know we sent you. Okay, let's move on to interview highlights from episode 59. Did a full
one. We actually did a few 180s.
The big change.
Everything left. The light bulb
went
off.
That's where it crystallized for me.
God just opened my eyes.
It changed my mind.
I changed my mind completely.
So, two things stuck out to me, and then we're going to get to the one thing I really want to talk about, which I'm going to play basically a chunk from the podcast because I don't really think that I could say it any better than we said it on the podcast. Yes, so episode 59 was with Gwenna Laithlin, who is a professional writer and editor and an ex-anti-vaxxer, and she came onto the podcast to explain what exactly changed her mind. I highly, highly recommend that you listen to this episode, and I highly, highly, highly recommend that you share it with friends who are anti-vax or vaccine hesitant, or they're on the fence and they're not quite sure. They've heard stuff from different sides and they don't really know what to believe. This is a great, great episode for that. Okay, so first of all, one of the most important parts that you should take away from this is that Gwenna did her own research. She went out and found this information on her own. She wasn't just given a stack of papers or an email with a bunch of links that somebody said, you need to read these and this will change your mind. She went out and did it herself. And that's how her mind changed. And this is something that we've seen a lot over the interview episodes that I've done on this podcast, which is people who actually take the initiative and go out and seek information and sift through it and do the analysis and really put brain power into it. Those are the people who come out on the other side saying, gosh, this evidence has really changed my mind. On the other hand, if you are very deep in the anti-vax, you know, the quote unquote vaccine education community, that's essentially like being in a cult. And that's more something that Holly Shear, who we did a previous episode on vaccines, spoke to. She wasn't necessarily in a cult, but she is much more familiar with the forums and the Facebook pages and the stuff that goes around in that. So if you're curious about what that's like and you have anti-vaxxer friends and you're not sure how to talk to them, that is a very good episode to go back and listen to. In any case, look at the info for yourself. If you feel that you can't trust the authorities specifically, that's really important, especially now in a day and age where we've got the World Health Organization, which the vast majority of people considered eminently credible. And then we figured out they're heavily funded by the Chinese Communist Party, and they have lied to us on multiple occasions. about COVID-19 and look at where it's got us. Here's a little bit of what Gwenna had to say about that.
And when the recommendations weren't followed, or in areas where they couldn't be or weren't enforced, we are seeing higher numbers. So that's where we have to go back to the data and our own common sense. So these recommendations weren't enforced here, and they have higher numbers. Places like LA and New York City, which do have really high infection rates, people aren't washing their hands appropriately. People aren't able to take the proper precautions, and they live so close to each other, right on top of each other. They have higher number of cases. So if you don't, if you can't, if you're struggling to trust the authorities, in which a lot of people do trust, then just look at the numbers for yourself. And you'll have to extrapolate a little bit of information.
And I've said this multiple times before on this podcast, on the breakdown sessions. Look at the studies, look at the data for yourself, try and get to the source. And if you go into a study and it doesn't make sense to you and it's too technical and you can't understand it, okay, well, at least you tried. And then go to a secondary source that can explain to you what it means. Hopefully not just some rando who wrote a blog article, but people in incredible publications who, you know, have the qualifications to explain to you exactly what's going on with something. Like, let's say the Stanford antibody test that came out a week or two ago that estimated in a certain population in Florida, there was, you know, like 3-4% of people had antibodies and probable immunity. And they estimated the fatality rate to be 0.5% or similar to the flu, something like that. You know, if you can't look at that study and really understand what's going on there, then you can go to a secondary source and be like, okay, but there are so many people right now who are relying on these dashboards, these quick and dirty numbers, these graphs that aren't properly labeled, that don't give you the, you know, whether something is cumulative or whether it's new cases or whether it's a rolling average or things like this. There's so much bad garbage data out there. You need to look at the information for yourself, and it is not that hard to understand, particularly with regard to this pandemic. Go to your state official coronavirus website, because they all have them. And if you can't find that particular website, go to their Department of Health and they will link you to it. And look at those curves, look at those numbers, those testing rates, those positive rates, look at all of that stuff for yourself. And then look around you and say, what exactly is happening? What is the picture that I see here with my own eyes? Because, you know, for instance, Governor Inslee, it's like the modeling scientist went and like kidnapped him and strapped him down in some sort of isolated re-education chamber. And then just spoke right into his face over and over again. Who are you going to believe? The models or your lying eyes? Okay? You are smart enough. You, who are smart enough to listen to this podcast, you are smart enough to understand most of this stuff for yourself. Gather all of that data. Use your critical thinking. Say, does this stuff make sense? And speaking of stuff that makes sense, I'm going to play for you a little bit of what Gwenna had to say in terms of explaining herd immunity, which is something that is not properly understood by anti-vaxxers, and why it is so important when it comes to vaccinating for COVID-19.
Sure. Well, first, herd immunity from the anti-vaxxer standpoint is wildly misunderstood. Herd immunity is not that we have developed herd immunity because so few people have gotten measles or mumps or rubella in the past X number of years or decades. Herd immunity is most of us, because we were vaccinated, and this is speaking on the theoretic level, most of us were vaccinated, therefore cannot carry or be infected with measles, mumps, or rubella, which is something that's treated with a shot called the MMR. We all got our MMR, we got all the rounds, and we got all the boosters. So theoretically, we cannot get measles, mumps, and rubella. And if on the off chance that we do get an infection, it is going to be very mild and likely not deadly, because our system has been trained how to deal with this particular virus. That's what the antibodies do. That's what vaccines do for us. Herd immunity means that because all the rest of us have, my mother-in-law, who has lupus, and cannot be vaccinated for MMR, she's also protected because I can't get it. I can't bring it over to her house. If your child was immunocompromised, say they had leukemia and were unable to get the treatment, I'm still protecting your child who is dealing with a completely different disease from getting this really deadly thing, more deadly for them because they're immunocompromised. So what exists of their immune system couldn't handle even a low-key infection. That's how herd immunity is supposed to work. But the term has become very, very conflated of, well, the herd is immune, so I don't have to get it. No, if we stop vaccinating the herd, eventually we run out of herd people, herd elements that are immune. And that's what we're seeing in California. That's what we're seeing in New York. That's what we're seeing in Montana, where large populations of the herd are no longer vaccinated because people think herd immunity works this way. But now we're beginning to see those diseases, which still very much existed. The vaccines didn't destroy the germ that causes measles, mumps, and rubella. It just taught our bodies how to fight it properly. It's like going to karate and then stumbling into ninjas. Now you know how to fight ninjas because you went to karate, which is, I'm sure, half your podcast listeners were like, that's not what karate is. I'm sorry. It's probably a poor analogy, but you get it. So now we're starting to pick off bits of the herd that are no longer immune. And here's the other thing about a lot of these diseases, and this is true for COVID-19 as well. You can be a carrier. If your body can carry the disease, which mine can't, I can't get measles, mumps, and rubella, or if I do, it's going to be a very, very light case because I taught my body how to fight that. I took derm karate with my vaccines. I've taught my children the same thing. They took derm karate. So COVID-19, you can be a carrier, which means I'm carrying around this disease and I can share it with other people and never, ever, ever know that I had it because I am asymptomatic. I'm not sick, or at least I don't feel sick. I'm just carrying around this germ like it's in my purse. So
yeah, it's even more important to have that herd immunity because of all of the asymptomatic people.
Right. Right. So yeah, you can't stop vaccinating the herd and then expect herd immunity to stay still. Herd immunity is to protect those who cannot, for valid medical reasons, be vaccinated. It's to protect those newborns, which everybody loves a squishy, scrunchy, wiggly newborn. They cannot be vaccinated for the first 3 months of their life. That's the first time you can get vaccinated is at 3 months. That's the first time their little immune systems are strong enough to begin to learn the antibodies we introduce with the vaccines. So it drives me nuts when people are like, oh, herd immunity. Okay, but every time you don't vaccinate a child who can safely be vaccinated, you're risking all those precious, beautiful little newborns you're so invested in protecting because they have none. Their mom's antibodies are gone within about a week or two, and they can't have more protection until 3 months old. And even then, that's not for all of it because you have to get to a certain point. That's why there's a schedule.
Right. And I think what this pandemic is also teaching us is that even if you're in a community, let's say, you're up here in Washington where there's fairly high levels of vaccination, you think, I don't need to get a vaccine because all of the people around me are protecting me from this because they've already, they've taken on the supposed risk of adverse reaction. So I don't have to do that. But because we're like a global economy and we have people moving across the world every single hour of every day, it's like at any point in time, somebody with mumps or the measles could come by and infect you. So I hope that was helpful. Go back and listen to the whole episode. It's episode 59. Anti-vaxxer flips, shares COVID-19 views. Go check it out. I will link it in the episode description. Okay, I'm going to give you a very quick update strong anecdotal evidence as far as the Paycheck Protection Program versus unemployment insurance is concerned. If you didn't catch my last episode where I talked about exactly how the Paycheck Protection Program, which is the massive grant/loan program that the government rolled out to help small businesses survive the shutdown, how that is coming into conflict with unemployment insurance because unemployment benefits are so generous that employees want to leave work and or not come back to work. And the Paycheck Protection Program has certain requirements about how many people you have to keep on the payroll. So go back and listen to the previous breakdown session if you want to know a little bit more about that. I was talking about this before apparently most of the mainstream media figured this out. Well, CNBC figured it out. They have an article called "She Got a Paycheck Protection Loan, Her Employees Hate Her for It." It says, when Black Lewis, who got $177,000 and $44,000 in PPP loans approved for her two spas in Washington, when she convened a virtual employee meeting to explain her good fortune, she expected jubilation and relief that paychecks would resume in full, even though the staff, primarily hourly employees, couldn't work. She got a different reaction. Quote, "It was a firestorm of hatred about the situation," Black Lewis said. The anger came from employees who determined they'd make more money by collecting unemployment benefits than their normal paychecks. "I couldn't believe it," she said. "On what planet am I competing with unemployment?" So that happened. She said, "It's a windfall they see coming. In their mind, I took it away." So there you have it. Yet another case of the Paycheck Protection Program coming into conflict with the extremely, extremely generous unemployment benefits, aka the $15 an hour minimum wage that the federal government has decided to guarantee unemployed people during this time. And unemployed people are eligible for it if they leave their jobs, even for just a determination on their own part that they are at risk of exposure. That is what the actual Federal Labor Department guidelines say. So if you are concerned about getting the Rona at work, because everybody's a little afraid of that, you can go ahead and separate from your job and collect unemployment and not come back, even if your employer gets a PPP loan. So a lot of these PPP loans are going to be moot. I think a lot of these are, there's going to be massive pressure to forgive these loans anyway, because they could not get their employees to come back because the unemployment benefits were so generous. And of course, the long-term economic consequences of this are going to be absolutely horrendous. This needs to be fixed immediately by Congress right now, right this second. They need to convene and roll back the unemployment benefits and say, sorry, next month, your unemployment benefits are going to be cut in half, or something drastic along those lines, because you cannot continue to give people unemployment benefits that give them more money, sometimes substantially more money than they would have made at their hourly job, or even in some cases, their salary job. This is untenable. It's unsustainable. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and move into just a little bit of corking the culture, a little bit of good vibes to wrap this episode up.
It's going to be legend. Wait for it.
Skip the end.
Dairy.
The lead singer of Glass Animals has been doing what he calls quarantine covers. And he's doing these covers of famous songs or very popular songs by artists that he really enjoys and that listeners have recommended to him. He's been doing these covers by himself in his studio. And he said there's a lot of his equipment that he doesn't have with him because the members of his band are all scattered all across the country and isolated. And so he can't get the equipment, much less all of the members of his band together to do something like this. But, you know, he's doing this to, I guess, stay busy and cheer people up. Here's a little bit of his cover of Nirvana's Heart-Shaped Box. He's doing all of this himself. He is playing each of these instruments himself and using looping to create this sound that sounds very much like a normal song with all of these instruments playing together. Looping is always something that I find really fascinating and very impressive skill. Here's a little bit of that.
I wish I could eat your cancer when you turn black. to survive. Hey, wait, I got a new complaint. For whoever and then do your priceless advice. Me eating oak is forgive no one just yet.
Is another cover of one of Lana Del Rey's song. I'm not a huge Lana Del Rey fan, but the song he covered is, I have to admit, quite good. She is a good songwriter. And then he also did Drake's Hotline Bling, and I think one or two others. Something to keep an eye on. You can go ahead and look it up on YouTube. Just look up Glass Animals Quarantine Covers. Very, very talented guy. His Glass Animals new song, what's that called? I think it's called Deja Vu. That is a very good song too. Very, very captivating, at least, you know, on a technical level. In any sense, that is all I have for you today. I know that was a long episode, but I hope you found this content valuable and useful to you. And if you did find it valuable and you like this podcast, please, please, please share it with your friends. And, you know, just share it on social media if you want. But what would mean more to me, honestly, is if you just copied the link and just texted it. I know, text so old-fashioned, right? But if you just copied the link and just, like, texted it to one of your friends and said, hey, I've been listening to this podcast, and I think it's really good. And you should take a listen, too. And there's a variety of episodes that might interest you on a topical level, as far as these interviews are concerned. And if you're more on the conservative side of the spectrum, this person, Georgie, who's awesome, of course, does this really great political and cultural analysis, and I really dig it, and you should listen to it. That would make me so happy. And if you have anything to say about the podcast, any feedback, if you are flipping out about something that I said and you think I am just spot on the money, which of course you do, right? If you're just flipping out and you totally disagree with something I said, or you think I'm totally ignoring something that seems obvious to you, you can leave a voicemail or text 323-999-1802. That's the flip phone, 323-999-1802, and I will respond to whatever you said on this podcast on the next breakdown session. Without further ado, please stay safe, look at all this information for yourself, be a responsible citizen, seek the truth, share your values, and listen with your heart and your mind. God bless.
In the middle of struggle, Lord, let me see who I am, what I need, who I've got to be. In the middle of the struggle, Lord, let me see who I am, what I need, who I've got to be. In the middle of
Executive producer Lord, Kevin McCullough. Music by Ruthie Kraft.
Who I am, what I need, who I've got to be. In the middle of the struggle, Lord, let me see who I am, what I need, who I've got to be.